From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Monday edition, the U.S. Surgeon General issuing a warning this morning on the Today Show.
I want America to understand this week it's going to get bad, and we really need to come together as a nation.
That was Surgeon General Jerome Adams saying people are not taking the warning seriously. 12 states have issued stay-at-home orders affecting over 126 million Americans. Now, many are dismissive of the unprecedented actions being taken by government, pointing to the number of Americans who die each year because of the flu. But there are some significant differences between the typical flu and the coronavirus. Dr. Martin McCary, a John Hopkins health policy expert and surgeon, is here on why the coronavirus is a threat, but one we can overcome if we're smart. And is House Speaker Nancy Pelosi behind Senate Democrats blocking the passage of the Phase 3 coronavirus stimulus package in the Senate? For the second time in 24 hours, a procedural vote in the U.S. Senate failed earlier today. Indiana Senator Mike Braun is here with the details. And on Friday, I hosted a conference call with President Trump, Vice President Pence, and Dr. Ben Carson, along with about 700 pastors from around the nation. I'll have highlights from that call, as well as one of the pastors who was on the call, Florida Pastor Greg Dumas, will join me. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right, as I mentioned at the top of the program, 12 states have now issued stay-at-home orders, including my home state of Louisiana. As coronavirus cases rise across the country to over 25,000, that number may seem small compared to the annual number of flu cases, but the contagion rate and the potency of the coronavirus is much different than the flu. Here to explain is John Hopkins health policy expert and surgeon, Dr. Martin McCary. Doctor, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me on, Tony.
I want to start with this. I'm hearing it. I got phone calls over the weekend. People say, oh, this is more, they're making more out of this than they should. We've got 61,000 people died of the flu in 2017-18 flu season. What is the difference, doctor, between the flu and the coronavirus?
Well, I think number one, it has a higher transmissibility quotient. That is, every person that gets it will, on average, give it to more people than the regular seasonal flu, in part because of a longer incubation period, in part because for most people, their symptoms are mild or no symptoms. And the other big factor is the case fatality rate, which is somewhere around 1%. So those two things in combination have led many to create prediction models that have suggested that as many as 40, 50, or 60% of the population in any country will get this. And what we're seeing in Italy is exactly that playbook being carried out. And it's the same in Spain. It's the same around the country. And one thing that's very clear is that although China has not been transparent with their numbers and Iran has not been transparent with their numbers, we are watching this play out in other parts of the world that are showing that this virus knows no borders and it knows no politics, and it basically it continues by person-to-person transmission. Now, the American exceptionalism idea is a great idea, but it doesn't apply to the immune system. And I think that's what we need to remember.
But it can't apply to our response if we are on top of it and we have a good healthcare system. But this, and I think the actions that are being taken, the stay-at-home orders, are all designed to keep our healthcare system, which is designed to, you know, accommodate normal healthcare needs, so that it's not overrun at one particular time, and we would have to start rationing healthcare. Is that what's behind some of these orders?
Yes, that's exactly right, Tony. And look, I'm not an alarmist or a conspiracist by nature. I'm really just a scientist. But looking at the data and looking at what's happening already in New York City and Washington State, we are not about to be overrun. Some of our hospitals are already overrun. And looking at the fact that we are 4 weeks roughly before our peak of this infection, we run the serious risk of being in a state of rationing care, something we've, you know, haven't really come to grips with. I hope it's wrong, but this is a hurricane coming to the United States like Hurricane Katrina. It's on a straight course for the U.S., except it's 100 times worse. And I think what we can do right now is hunker down and do our best to take care of those who are most vulnerable. The data from Italy is pretty clear. They're rationing care, and they've got limited resources, and they did a lockdown early. Now, look, there's differences between the U.S. and Italy, but we're 6 times bigger. And so accounting for the different differences, adjusting for our population and age, what they are seeing there and seeing about 800 deaths in a single day would translate to 4,000 Americans dying in a single day. And again, that's weeks before the peak. That's what we're worried about. We only have 100,000 ICU beds in the U.S. We can maybe double that or triple that. And we've seen people come together at 9/11 where we cleared half the hospital beds to get ready for the storm. So we can increase our capacity, but our concern is we just can't do it to the magnitude that there will be need during those few weeks where we run the risk of rationing. So this is our time to come together. This is our time to call those who are vulnerable and drop off a package for them, make sure they're okay. This is our moment to shine, and I think we're going to need all hands on deck.
Well, Dr. McCary, you mentioned Katrina. I lived through that, was a part of the response to that in my home state of Louisiana. And we've gone through a number of natural disasters in Louisiana. But here's the thing that's a little bit different. In those particular cases, we can rely on other parts of the nation to help. This is one in which the entire nation is being affected and taxed. And so there's really no place to look for help. We're it. And as you said, we've got to come together in this sense. And I just want to dispel the notion among people who are saying, oh, this is nothing new. We've got, as I mentioned, 61,000 people died in the 17-18 flu season. This, and I have a daughter who is an ER nurse. And so I have a little bit of insight on how this is working. And I noticed today, Surgeon General talked about how we're not going to, and I'm quoting, we're not going to ventilator our way out of this problem. This is the only treatment for those in the serious cases are the ventilators, and that seems to be one of those devices that is in seriously short supply. And that's where we get into the healthcare rationing that may have to take place.
Yeah, I mean, if we just do the math, we don't have the resources. And so the only thing we can do is to do everything possible to stop the transmission in its tracks. I mean, let's look at let's take the lowest end of the estimates that are coming out of Harvard, and they're coming out of New York State, and they're coming out of epidemiology. Let's say instead of the 40% of the public getting the infection, that's the low end of the range. Let's take half of that. Let's say 20% gets it, which is getting close to the proportion that get the seasonal flu each year. If 20% of 350 million people get this infection, that's 70 million people. A 1% case fatality rate is a lot of people, right? That's a lot of people. That's 700,000 people. We only have 100,000 ICU beds. So right now, New York is reporting a 15% hospitalization rate. To take 70 million people and say we need a hospital bed for 15% of that, we're nowhere even close. So the math is very clear. And if you that's cutting in half the low end of the range. It could be worse. We don't want to create hysteria. We don't want people to panic. But there are things we can do to get ready. And the biggest battle, in my opinion, is public awareness. Yeah. People are changing their minds and realizing, hey, we can't blow this off. This is not a joke. This is real.
Okay, so the threat is real. We've established that fact. Now let's talk about the precaution, what every American needs to do. You talked about taking care of the elderly, those at risk, letting them stay at home and take, drop groceries off at the door. But we've got to take these, the social distancing recommendations serious. Those in states that are at high risk, the stay-at-home orders, I mean, these are put out there for a purpose. And if we just forget all of that and move forward as if nothing is happening just because we're not sick, we could be transmitters of the virus, and we're only going to move us toward a, I wouldn't say a worst case scenario, but we're certainly not helping.
Well, thanks for bringing up the social distancing piece, because we talk about it, but I think there are subtle things we don't think about. For example, our telephones are extensions of our hands. And when we wash our hands and go back to using our phones, that's a mode of transmission. When you fill up gas, when you exchange your credit card or money at the counter, even at a grocery store, those are times we've got to just be super, super diligent about all the little ways that bacteria can spread by contact. Common surfaces. Make sure anyone who's high risk is not the workforce right now, and they are isolated. They're protected. They can be outside. The sunlight is wonderful, okay? The virus does not like sunlight. It does not like the outdoors environment. But if you can social distance even on your property or somewhere outdoors, that's okay. But think about those with organ transplants, those on chemo, those who are over 60 or 65 years of age, those who have diabetes or lung disease, those who smoke or vape. We're really worried about those individuals as having a higher case fatality rate. That is, we know this virus, thanks to God's grace, is relatively sparing of kids. There's only been one kid that's been reported who's died from this, who's been healthy, and that was a case from China. Not all the data's in yet. We know kids can get the infection, they can spread the infection, but it's rare for anybody under age 12 for a kid to die from it. Once you start getting older, even starting after age 40, this is where it starts getting close to home for me as a healthcare worker, because those of us in healthcare are at the highest risk. Yeah. That inflection point starts to increase. That case fatality goes up, and it goes up with advanced age.
Dr. McCary, we're almost out of time, but the you know, people are saying, well, you know, the recommendations keep changing. You know, we were at groups of 250, then 50, then 10. Is that because you talked about the models earlier? It's because we don't know what this coronavirus is like. We're discovering this as we go along. And so as the models change, we've got to change our behavior.
That's exactly right, Tony. When the story started coming out of Wuhan, China, that they were building tent hospitals, and in a town of 10 million, they built 23 field hospitals and still were overrun and rationing, we didn't know whether or not to believe them. And so, you know, with our American optimism, we were hoping for the best. We were hoping it was going to be contained. We were hoping we didn't have to deal with this. But some of us in public health called physicians over there. You know, we would remind those in the media, they have phones in China and you can talk to the doctors. And sure enough, those were real stories. And that's when we started telling folks, we've got to get prepared. What's the risk of being overprepared and looking back and saying it wasn't quite as bad as the projections?
That would be a much better scenario to be overprepared than underprepared. Dr. McCary, thanks so much for taking time out of your busy day to join us. Very insightful, very helpful, and we'll continue to encourage people to follow those guidelines to keep themselves and others safe and healthy. Doctor, have a great day.
Thanks for having me.
All right, folks, don't go away. On the other side of the break, is House Speaker Nancy Pelosi behind the Democrats blocking phase 3 of the coronavirus relief bill in the Senate? We'll talk to Indiana Senator Mike Braun next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. Is historic masculinity lost forever? Where can boys, young men, husbands, and fathers find a model of manhood, leadership, and strength in a culture of gender confusion? We need men to be men, tough with compassionate strength, bent toward justice without compromise, locking arms and standing. We need to be the men God created us to be and fight for all that is right, true, and just. This is Tony Perkins inviting you to join us at a Stand Courageous Men's Conference. To find out more, go to standcourageous.com. This conference is led by men who are seasoned, compassionate men who understand the issues of the day and will invest in you, helping you understand your role as a defender, a provider, an instructor, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, so that you can have the generational influence that God has designed you to have. Learn more at standcourageous.com. That's standcourageous.com.
Did you know that Planned Parenthood is the primary supplier of abortions in the U.S.? According to Planned Parenthood's most recent annual report, it committed over 345,000 abortions in fiscal year 2018. That means, on average, Planned Parenthood aborted 1,768 babies every single day in 2018. And while Planned Parenthood's report revealed an increase in abortions committed, many of the services they provide, such as breast exams and cancer screenings, have drastically decreased. FRC recently released its 2020 edition of The Real Planned Parenthood, Leading the Culture of Death. In this resource, you will find many facts revealing the truth, that Planned Parenthood is in the business of abortion, not healthcare. To access this resource and to find out more, go to frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts. That's frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts.
We can all benefit from a good lecture. They inform you and grow you. But sometimes you can't make it in person to every talk, seminar, or lecture you'd like to. Fortunately, Family Research Council now has a new podcast so you won't miss out. FRC's new weekly podcast called Lecture Me was created to help inform and equip listeners on the biggest issues affecting our culture today. Each episode presents a lecture selected from the archives of the FRC Speaker Series. Our podcast features today's top thinkers who address important issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture, all from a biblical worldview. Make sure to stay tuned after each lecture to hear FRC's thoughts on the content as they further discuss the topic at hand. The Lecture Me podcast is available wherever podcasts are found, or visit frc.org/podcasts.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Hey, I want to know what you think about how President Trump and his administration, how they're handling the coronavirus. I'm going to send you, if you'd like to take a part of the poll, text radio, the word radio, to 53445. That's 53445. Text the word radio. I'll send you the poll. Are you confident in the actions taken by the president and the White House coronavirus task force? Again, text radio to 53445. Well, last week, in fact, we were talking about on Friday how quickly the Senate was moving at, rapid pace for the Senate. Well, that all changed over the weekend. Reports are Nancy Pelosi is behind the Democrats, slowing down the process of phase three of the coronavirus economic stimulus plan that was put together into last week and into the weekend. What is the status of this plan? In the last 24 hours, two votes have failed along procedural lines. When might we see something? Join me now to talk about it, Senator Mike Braun of Indiana. Senator, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, good to be back on the show.
Well, Senator, let's talk about this. You guys were making progress at light speed, something unfamiliar with the Senate, but it's like somebody hit the brakes over the weekend, and we're now at a standstill.
Well, Rahm Emanuel was right. Never waste a good crisis, and I think that's why Pelosi actually flew back and started saying things like, we want to do our own bill. Well, that couldn't have even happened. She doesn't have any House members here, but what she wanted to do was commandeer what was working between these task groups made up of Democratic and Republican senators, all zeroing in on what looked like it was going to be a done deal to where yesterday we could have gotten this across the finish line, but didn't happen. And just like with USMCA, I think she thinks she's the kingmaker when it comes to doing things around here, and that's where we're at. So I confronted four or five Democrats, won't mention their names, but basically they've presented a laundry list from climate issues to minimum wage to all kinds of stuff, extraneous, not pertinent. And there were three issues, and I just got done with a floor speech that threw the gauntlet at them. What can we focus on? And it's all stuff Republicans would be okay with. When it comes to the transparency piece, for any big business that gets access to loans, especially airlines, I'm for full transparency and restrictions on what they can do with the money. The other two areas would have been plussing up hospitals a little bit. They're the front line of defense on this, and state and local governments. They didn't even really mention that because they were trying to do the other things to get it into the package. And that's the place that thing that disappoints me about this place. Now that I've been here a little over a year, it's sadly the way it works.
Well, and you come at this from a very similar perspective to President Trump, and that is from a businessman's perspective.
Exactly.
And I don't think, you know, Nancy Pelosi's done this a couple of times now. This is not the – dealing with President Trump is not dealing like dealing with other political people. He's not political.
Not at all.
He wants to solve the problem. I don't think – they may think that they have the president and the administration over a barrel, but I don't see the president giving in to these, as you say, extraneous elements that they're tacking on to this bill that have nothing to do with the coronavirus response.
And we shouldn't, and the American public is not going to be for that either. And sadly, this has all been created by the bona fide effort of trying to tamp the disease down. I was the first Republican last Thursday with a floor speech as well that said, when it comes to day 15, we've got to take everything we've learned about how it disproportionately impacts a certain vulnerable part of our population. It disproportionately impacts densely populated areas. And we cannot systematically have economic shutdowns cascading across this country without being aware that after 15 days, this economy, even with this package, could have irreversible damage that does not make sense. You'd always take what you learn from dealing with any crisis, update your strategy and your tactics accordingly. And you hear President Trump talking about reevaluating next Monday. I'm glad he's saying that because we may need to.
Yeah, I agree. And I think a lot of Americans agree. Although, you know, we were just talking about the seriousness of this virus and that if people would. And I know this is what the White House was saying at the beginning. If we'll take our medicine, which is not very tasty, the 15 days of basically limiting our interaction, maybe we can get by and then get back on closer to normal. But unfortunately, not everyone is adhering to that. But I want to go back to this relief bill because, you know, as conservatives, we're concerned about the size of $1.8 trillion. It's a lot bigger than it originally proposed. But the Democrats wanting to make it even bigger with unrelated items. At the end of the day, Senator Braun, what do you think is going to happen and when do you think it'll happen?
So this should have been across the finish line last night procedurally to where we could have voted on it this morning. And it is down to $1.8 trillion. And these numbers get thrown around out here like they don't mean much. That's a little under 10% of our annual GDP. Yeah. And when you think about this is being caused by government, and it's a tough issue. We know that this is something that's got the most national anxiety of anything I've ever witnessed. But I think we've let the epidemiologists control completely the approach, and we need to make sure that we do measure that against the economic effect, which we talked about earlier. Yeah. But this bill is designed to make whole the individuals and businesses, and especially small businesses and wage earners. And then beyond that, if not the fiscally most conservative guy here, one of the three or four, it needs to be done, or else we then next Monday will have to trade off whether we keep fighting the disease without having any supports in place. So it's a tough call.
Well, it's two battles. You're fighting on two fronts, an economic battle, trying to hold the economy together, and you're fighting this virus and keeping it from spreading. So it's basically a two-front war.
It's a two-front war, and I think so far I loved it when Trump did the travel ban from China and Europe, probably the number one thing that's kept this down. And you can see the first portal where people came in, New York, they're suffering from that. And we need to treat every state a little differently and make sure we don't kill the economy.
Senator, we got to leave it there. Senator Braun, thanks so much for joining us. Folks, don't go away. We're back with more after this.
What are you reading this spring? At FRCblog.com, we have timely and original commentary on the issues facing our culture today. Our blog is written by our policy experts, the Family Research Council team, and outside contributors. On our blog, you can read about a wide variety of topics, including religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture. Some of our most recent blog posts include, "To abandon the nuclear family ideal is to abandon being human." "Why does the abortion industry hate women?" "China uses coronavirus to oppress religious minorities," and many more. At Family Research Council, our mission is to advance faith, family, and freedom in the culture by helping you to live out your faith and to stand for truth. With our blog, we hope to help you do that. Stay informed and get the resources you need at FRCblog.com. Again, that's FRCblog.com.
The Fairness for All Act was recently introduced to the House of Representatives after the passage of the Equality Act. In response, FRC has come out with a new publication, The Unfairness of the Fairness for All Act. This act attempts to find a compromise between the First Amendment protection of religious freedom and the demands of the LGBT community. Despite having the best intentions, it is an ill-advised and poorly drafted bill that does not achieve its goal. If this act is passed into law, it would allow the federal government to impose a belief system and ideology about sexual behavior and identity on all Americans. The Fairness for All Act would negatively impact religious freedom, true equality, and the privacy and safety of women. To access this resource and to learn more, go to frc.org/fairnessforall. That's frc.org/fairnessforall.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. The website is tonyperkins.com. All right, if you'd like to participate in our poll today, are you confident in the actions taken by the president and the White House Coronavirus Task Force? Text radio to 53445. I'll share the results at the end of the program. Again, text the word radio, that's what you're listening to 53445. 53445. All right, I want to continue the conversation here. I don't like the nonstop focus on the coronavirus, but it's what people are thinking about, right? And I over the weekend I was getting phone calls from people who were saying, they're making too much out of this, they're killing the economy, and this is nothing more than the seasonal flu. Well, I know that's not the case. On the other hand, I'm getting people who are scared to death. You know, Christians in particular, who are, hunkered down. Churches that, I understand not to be meeting, but just kind of like beside themselves, not knowing what to do. And the balance is where we need to strike. We need to be somewhere in the middle. We need to take this serious because it is serious. As I mentioned with Dr. McCary, my daughter, whom I'm very proud of. She actually volunteered to serve in the respiratory unit in the ER room dealing with the coronavirus patients. So she's right there at the ground zero of where this is taking place in one of the largest hospitals in our area. And this is real, all right? I can just say it's real, it's serious, and so we've got to do our part. Now, doesn't mean we're fearful. And I used this scripture last week, what Paul wrote to Timothy. Last letter to Timothy. Timothy, he was kind of his protege, spiritual son. Paul was, this is his last letter. He was about to be executed. And he says this, "For God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power." I mean, think about this guy on death row. He says, "God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of sound mind." We have to have a sound mind. And the only way we can do that is we have to rise above the fear. And we've got to be reasonable and rational and take the necessary precautions. And it just is beyond me that people are saying, well, Trump's trying to kill the economy. Trump and his policies are what made the economy take off. In fact, how many times has he bragged about the economy and the lowest unemployment rate in history? Do you think he would intentionally take actions to tank that? I don't think so. They know that this is serious. They've been communicating. They're not hiding anything from the American people. But, I mean, you're seeing on the news now where, you know, college students went off and, you know, down to spring break, and now they're being tested positive for the coronavirus. We'll go figure. Look, folks, no reason to be fearful. But follow the guidelines. Follow the guidelines. Do the social distancing. If you have a stay-at-home order in place in your state and you're not a part of, essential frontline workers, you know, try to stay at home. Work from home. Be productive. Please be productive. Our economy needs it. As I said earlier with Senator Braun, this is a two-front war. We've got to fight the virus, contain it, and keep our people from getting sick and overwhelming our hospital system, which is limited in its capacity. And I made references with Dr. McCary earlier, the way we treat flu patients, influenza, and the respiratory problems associated with that are different than the coronavirus. The coronavirus attacks the lungs in such a way, and you can't treat the respiratory problems in the same way because it aerosolizes the particles in the infected patient, which puts it in the air and other people can get it. So you have to use a contained system. There's only so many of those. So it's serious. We want to take care of people, but we don't want to operate out of fear. And our churches, I'm so thankful for those pastors. I got messages through, and we're going to talk about this in the next segment, pastors who are ministering to their people. I mean, people driving into their parking lots yesterday, they couldn't meet, but they came into the parking lots, pastors just praying over the cars as people came in. I know we live in a world of technology and social media, but we still want the human touch. And this is where the pastors and spiritual leaders and Christians need to have that sound mind that we are serious, we're sober in addressing and approaching this healthcare threat, but not overwhelmed with anxiety and fear. Let's pray for our nation. Let's pray for God to intervene and stop this virus, this plague. Let's use this opportunity to minister to those who are in need, starting with our own congregations, to the shut-ins, to the elderly, to those in the high-risk categories. As Dr. McCary said, look, take groceries to them. Check on them. See if they need medicines, just so they don't have to get out. But let's not be invisible. Let's not hunker down in caves. Let's take this opportunity to be smart and to minister and to encourage. I'm not fearful about this. I'm sober-minded about it, but not fearful. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk about the pastors. Last Friday, I mentioned this briefly in passing on the program. We had a phone call, conference call with pastors, president, vice president, and secretary of HUD, Dr. Ben Carson, all on the line to encourage the pastors. One of those pastors is going to join me, but I got some highlights from that call coming up in the next segment. So don't go away. More Washington Watch to come right after this. Where can young men, husbands, and fathers find a model of real manhood, leadership, and strength in today's culture of gender confusion? This is Tony Perkins inviting you to join us at a Stand Courageous Men's Conference led by men who are seasoned, compassionate men who understand the issues of the day and will help you understand your role as a defender, provider, instructor, battle buddy, and chaplain so that you can have the generational influence God has designed you to have. Learn more at StandCourageous.com.
Recently, a bill called the Fairness for All Act was introduced to the House of Representatives. In response, FRC has a new resource, the Unfairness of the Fairness for All Act. This act attempts to find a compromise between the First Amendment's protection of religious freedom and the demands of the LGBT community. But, unfortunately, it is a poorly drafted bill that would negatively impact religious freedom, true equality, and the privacy and safety of women. Learn more at frc.org/fairnessforall.
Did you know that Planned Parenthood is the primary supplier of abortions in the U.S.? According to Planned Parenthood's most recent annual report, it committed over 345,000 abortions in fiscal year 2018. That means, on average, Planned Parenthood aborted 1,768 babies every single day in 2018. And while Planned Parenthood's report revealed an increase in abortions committed, many of the services they provide, such as breast exams and cancer screenings, have drastically decreased. FRC recently released its 2020 edition of The Real Planned Parenthood, Leading the Culture of Death. In this resource, you will find many facts revealing the truth, that Planned Parenthood is in the business of abortion, not healthcare. To access this resource and to find out more, go to frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts. That's frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts.
We can all benefit from a good lecture. They inform you and grow you. But sometimes you can't make it in person to every talk, seminar, or lecture you'd like to. Fortunately, Family Research Council now has a new podcast so you won't miss out. FRC's new weekly podcast called Lecture Me was created to help inform and equip listeners on the biggest issues affecting our culture today. Each episode presents a lecture selected from the archives of the FRC Speaker Series. Our podcast features today's top thinkers who address important issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture, all from a biblical worldview. Make sure to stay tuned after each lecture to hear FRC's thoughts on the content as they further discuss the topic at hand. The Lecture Me podcast is available wherever podcasts are found, or visit frc.org/podcasts.
I'm Tony Perkins, and you're listening to Washington Watch, the website, tonyperkins.com. All right, the poll question. You got a few more minutes to take it. I'll give you the results, so probably about 5 minutes before the hour. Text radio to 53445. That's 53445. Text the word radio, and I'll send you the poll. And the question is, are you confident in the actions taken by the president and the White House coronavirus task force? I don't want to slant your opinion. But I am. I am. And I think the president has done a remarkable job in handling an unprecedented two-front war, as I said, taking on the virus and trying to hold the economy together, which both are very serious. As I mentioned, on Friday, we had a call scheduled with the vice president and a number of our pastors, what we call our watchman pastors. We have about 15,000 of those across the country. And, of course, we only have so many phone lines. We had about 700 pastors on a call. It was supposed to be with the vice president and secretary of HUD, Dr. Ben Carson, who's a great guy. Both of them great. Well, the president jumped on the call as well and spent a good bit of time with the pastors. But this weekend, the president even made reference to the call with pastors at the weekend press event that he does every day on the coronavirus task force. Here's a little bit of what the president had to say this weekend.
And very importantly, the religious leaders. We had a great conversation yesterday, the vice president and myself, with the religious leaders of our country, many of the religious leaders, and we've had a number of them during the course of the last 2 weeks, actually. But yesterday we had a very significant call with the religious leaders of our country.
And I'm going to play, with their permission, play just a little bit of that call, some of the highlights of the call. Here is just a short clip of what the president had to say on the call.
And also with respect to this whole new virus that came upon us so suddenly, and we were doing better than we've ever done before as a country in terms of the economy, and then all of a sudden we got hit with this, so we had to close it down. We're actually paying a big price to close it down. Never happened before, but I think we're going to come back stronger than ever before. I want to thank you all for praying for our country and for those who are sick. You do such an incredible job. You're very inspirational people, and I'm with you all the way.
And, in fact, we did pray for the president on the call before he got off the call. But joining me now is one of the pastors who was on the call, Pastor Greg Dumas of the Crossing Church in Tampa, Florida. And he was on the call, actually made reference to it this weekend in his online message. Pastor Dumas, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be with you.
Let me just ask you, I know you made reference to this in your online sermon this week. I know your church under the restrictions of meeting, and so you you have a couple of campuses, and so you sent it out via the web and Facebook and such, and I watched a clip from YouTube. How did you find the president's comments on Friday as a pastor?
Well, we are in unprecedented times, and it was more than impressive to think about the commander-in-chief and of course, the extra load that he's carrying now. And for him to leave what he was doing and to join us on the call was quite astounding and very encouraging. It was great to hear from him personally and of course, from Vice President Mike Pence as well and Ben Carson. I mentioned all of those things. It was very impactful. It was not just notable. It was very encouraging.
You mentioned Vice President Mike Pence, who spent probably 35 minutes or more talking to the pastors, a lot more than I had anticipated. In fact, when we do these calls, usually they're able to work in 5 minutes, and he just stayed with us. I want to play a couple of clips from the call and what the vice president had to say. Play clip number 4, Bobby.
As the president said many times, we're all in this together. And marshaling the resources of this nation of faith in America is of enormous importance as we all address the threat of the coronavirus impacting now all 50 states in this country. And let me just say also, the president and I couldn't be more inspired by the way communities of faith have been stepping up. It is remarkable to see how many churches, as of last week, heeded the counsel of our CDC and the task force and your state and local officials, suspended services and directed your members to participate online.
So, Pastor Dumas, did you get a sense from the conversation with the president, the vice president, and as you mentioned, Secretary of HUD, Dr. Ben Carson, that they see pastors and churches as really partners in helping meet the needs of our country and our communities?
Well, I heard even deeper than that. I heard their appreciation. I could hear their commendation for pastors and faith-based community, and really the primacy that they place on pastors and many other civic and local leaders that are in the faith-based community to be on the ground, to get the work done. And they mentioned several historic things, 9/11 and Katrina, and it's more than just sort of tipping your hat at the faith-based community and pastors. It was really a heartfelt connection and saying, look, we get it. We understand. You are the ones that are on the ground. You're the ones that are dealing with the people and the church. I heard that bell ring very clearly. The church is, if not the answer, you're in the center of the answer for the things that take place in our country. And we recognize you and we're thankful for you. And just the wherewithal to, for the commander in chief to take time, and he took more time than I thought, I mean, was even possible. And of course, you've mentioned Vice President Mike Pence and as well, Ben Carson, very moving. Ben Carson's story, and I've read the co-joined twins, and of course, he's a brilliant brain surgeon. Just the peace that he brought.
Yeah.
He exhorted us in a way.
He preached a sermon.
He is so gentle and but so powerful in the Spirit of God.
Yeah. And sensitive to the needs of the pastors and the churches, which, you know, carrying the weight of the entire country, the economy, and this healthcare crisis, you know, the vice president on Saturday, actually, he said he was going to do this on the call, and he ended up, he did do it in his daily press conference, encouraged Americans who may not be able to attend church because of the limitations on gatherings, but to not neglect giving to the local church because of the vital role that the church plays in our community, not just preaching the gospel, but ministering in ways that speak to the gospel by caring for the needs of those in their community. So he made that very clear and again said that on Saturday for people to give to their congregations. Speaking of that, Pastor Dumas, how's your church, your congregation, how are they adjusting to this?
Well, we're adjusting well. We've been streaming our services for some time, like a lot of churches have. A couple of weeks ago, when we heard from Ron DeSantis and we heard the governing, local authorities talking to us about, you know, not gathering in more than 10, we made that shift immediately. Wanted to be respectful and responsive, and our church was right there. They're right in step, and so we're continuing to get together. Things like Zoom, where we could get together in small groups and connect and still minister. And of course, the message is for everyone not to be fearful. We want to be respectful. This is a very dangerous situation, but we also want to be full of faith.
Yes.
And we want to do everything we can to meet the needs of the church and then the community at large.
Yeah, I think it's extremely important. We can't say it enough. I mentioned it earlier. In 2 Timothy, where he said, we're not given a spirit of fear, but of love and of power and of a sound mind, as Paul wrote to Timothy. And I think it's very important. We take this threat seriously. We're sober-minded, sound mind, but also we're not overcome with fear. We know that, God will guide us through this if we look to him, and there's no reason to operate in fear. In fact, you know, this is one of the, I have found, and you being in Florida, I've experienced a lot of the natural disasters. When all of the distractions of life are taken away, people begin to contemplate upon the more eternal matters. And so it's a time for the church to really minister by addressing those needs and those, you know, that what some call the God vacuum that we tend to fill with so many activities that we were so busy, so distracted as Americans these days that we don't take time to ponder those things. And this is one of those times where people are beginning to ask the deeper questions of life.
Yeah, this weekend, actually, as I prayed and was prepping for this weekend a couple of weeks ago, I felt like God was asking me to address our congregation and the people at large, you know, sometimes all the way around the world. A very sizable group of people that are online just through creation. And so I encourage the congregation this weekend to remember when they wake up and they see the sunrise, and to remember when they see the sun setting that God is the creator, the founder, and that we can count on him. I even challenge them to take a blade of grass and worship him and be reminded of the miracle of photosynthesis and how he created the earth. And without those complexities, we wouldn't have oxygen. We wouldn't be here.
Right.
And just the glory in the fact that God is present, that he's here, he's not left us, that he cares, and he's cared through every war, famine, and flood through the history of the world. He's not changed. He's on his throne. And we can sure enough be the light of the world in this circumstance, in this situation. That's what we're called to be. And if necessary, we want to continue to be brave people. We want to understand. We want to have wisdom. We want to do everything we're supposed to do. But then in the face of these things, we're the ones who are the light of the world. We're a city on a hill. And so Christianity rises in times of darkness. And man, what an opportunity we have to preach the gospel in a relevant way. We just had incredible response online this week, an additional 1,000 people gathering in great conversations with people that are far from God and are asking questions.
Yeah.
And so it's an unprecedented time.
Yeah, and we can't respond to that if we're operating in fear ourselves. We have to be confident of the one who holds our future. Pastor Dumas, thanks so much for joining us, and thanks for being on the call Friday.
My pleasure, Tony.
All right, Pastor Greg Dumas, pastor of the Crossing Church in Tampa, Florida. It is remarkable times. No question about it. Times of great opportunity, times of great challenge. In fact, this weekend, I did our Bible study on Numbers chapter 20, keeping in line with our two-year Through the Bible reading program on Saturday nights. I'm doing an online Facebook Bible study, at least through this time when people can't attend church. But we were talking about Numbers chapter 20 when the water came out of the rock. Moses was told to speak to the rock. He hit it. Cost him the promised land. But the point being that these crises, what's the point of going through crisis? Well, James talks about it. It is to build perseverance and to bring us to maturity. God could bring, he brought the water out of the rock. In fact, he had done the same thing for the previous generation 38 years earlier, their parents' generation. Can God stop the virus? Can he solve this? Yes. Yes. So the question is, what do we need to learn in this process? As individuals, what do we need to learn? What's God saying to us? As a nation, what do we need to learn? That should be a part of our prayer as we pray for our leaders, praying that they have wisdom, that they make the right decisions, and praying for the sick, praying for the healthcare workers. We need to be praying, but also asking God, God, what are you showing us? What do you want to bring about in our lives through this? Worth praying about. All right, here's the results from our poll that it gave you for those who participated in the poll. Let me pull it up here real quick. I'm working on it. Here we go. Poll results. 91% said, yes, I am confident in what the president and the coronavirus task force is doing. 2% said they're not confident, and 7% said somewhat confident. I'm confident. I really am. I think this president is making decisions that are in the best interest of the American people, and we need to work with them. We need to do our part, and a big part of that is praying for our president, praying for the task force, praying for our leaders, and then following the guidelines. I know it's hard. Do the social distancing. Care for the shut-ins and the elderly by keeping your distance in part. All right, until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.